This is my journey, inspired one story at a time. A library of leaders was created. It began as a journey to learn. As time went on, it began to grow. All it needed was a platform, and this podcast was created to listen, to inspire, to share. I am a storyteller, and this is my journey. Welcome to another episode of Profiles in Leadership. I am your host, Steve Anderson, and today our guests are Chris and Steve Albanese. I thought it would be really fun to talk with two brothers who are co-CEOs of a very progressive and impressive healthcare company. They have over 50-plus PT clinics and contracts in New York, North Carolina, Connecticut, and Pennsylvania. They manage the company together with their spouses as well. So interesting family dynamic there where you have four family members running the company. Both Chris and Steve have been very active in mastermind peer groups, and they've also been very active in the private practice section of the American Physical Therapy Association. You will hear their passion, their drive as lifelong learners, and their pride of being Eagle Scouts. Enjoy this enlightening discussion with Chris and Steve, and let's jump right into it. Steve and Chris, welcome to the program. I'm excited to have you on today.
Steve, thanks so much for having us. We appreciate it.
Yeah, it's a pleasure.
Now, this is going to be interesting because I'm telling you, this is the first time I've ever done two people on one interview. So we'll see how it goes. But with your brothers, as being brothers, I'm sure you can get along great, right?
We'll see how it goes. I'm excited for it, though.
Okay, so now you guys run a large physical therapy company, 50-plus locations, and your brothers. So I got to ask right out of the gate, so who's older? Which one of you is the older brother?
I am by just a little bit. This is Chris, about a year and a half. I think our mom took about 4 years off from teaching and had three of us and then went back to teaching.
Okay, so you have other sibling as well then?
Yes, we have a younger sister, three of us.
Okay, great. So I'm real intrigued about your business. It just seems to be incredibly successful, and yet it's a family business with the two brothers involved, and then I think your spouses are involved as well. So you get four people all related working in the business. How do you make it work? That's not easy.
So, you know, it's so... And when, you know, when we first started, you look at like the strengths finders and the wheel, and you have each one of our strengths. And ironically, when we did this in the beginning, each one of us was a different strength. And so, you know, right off the bat, we knew that we had just a good team, a good partnership. You throw the whole family dynamics involved and maybe it becomes a little less good, but it's been wonderful. You know, there's so many more pros and cons, and it's been super fun and just fulfilling to be able to work, you know, with our family and in a business, which has been so much fun.
Yeah, that's great. Go ahead, Chris.
I believe I think be pretty familiar with discs. And I'm a data nerd. So I'm kind of a DI. Steve's kind of like Shannon's a high I. Steve's a kind of a high IS with a little bit of D, and Janet's kind of like a high C with a little D. So we pretty much have the wheel covered, if you will. Yeah. But we share very similar driving forces. Like they're all like we're pretty much overlap on the driving forces, but cover the spectrum in the behaviors.
That's excellent. Well, you couldn't ask for better diversity than that. That's awesome. So I think you might hinted at it right now, Chris, but I was going to ask which one of you is the right brain thinker and which one of you is the left brain analytical thinker. So are you different in that sense, or are you both on the same side of the brain there?
You know, that's an interesting question. You know, there's no doubt that I think Steve and I tend to kind of be a little bit more looking out big picture, kind of trying to kind of always position access in the best possible place in the future, where thank God we have our wives who kind of bring us down to reality day to day and, you know, definitely kind of tackle some of the pressing issues and, of course, fires you have in running a business.
So you might even say that your spouses are the left brain thinkers that bring you back to reality once in a while.
Our spouses keep us in line for sure, day to day. Whether it's at work or at home, it doesn't matter. So
That's great.
It's across the board.
Yes.
You know, I'm really intrigued when you have, you know, two people like yourselves equally capable and running a big business. And there was a book written a few years back called The Power of Two. And the point the book was trying to make was that some of the greatest businesses around and some of the greatest inventions around were done by two people. And it wasn't just one person, because one kind of filled in, had gifts that the other one didn't, and vice versa, and they supported each other. And, you know, there were examples of like, you know, Lennon and McCartney, or there's examples like Paul Allen and Bill Gates and the Wright brothers and so on. So it was just interesting. Do you guys feel like you feed off each other in a way that together just makes you more powerful than you could be as one?
Absolutely, Steve. And, you know, I think this great country is only businesses. And so when we went into business, it was just a great thing, and high trust, high energy, and kind of aligned values. So no doubt that we all kind of play different positions. And I think, you know, the team wins based on a strong offense and defense.
And tell me a little bit, how is the company structured? Now, you do you have outpatient locations? Do you have contracts? You've got 50 different sites, so to speak. So just give me a little rundown on how that's structured.
Yeah, so we have, like you said, about 50-plus outpatient sites, which are freestanding sites, so in most of the Northeast. And then we also, for the past 6 years, have been managing the rehab for a health system. So a few hospitals doing their inpatient, outpatient skilled nursing on a contract. And so, you know, it really, that's been, that in itself has really gotten us into the value-based world and looking at, you know, all started with the CJR and the BPCI, so the bundle payments for total joints, and looking at really the value of rehab. And when the right patient receives the right rehab service at the right time, then it creates tremendous value for the patient, the healthcare system, and it works out better financially as well. And so it's a win-win all around. And so, yes, our sites are outpatient, but definitely, you know, looking at how the outpatient then creates a, you know, works better within the healthcare system, locally with employers, health systems, payers, et cetera.
And so what do you think you've learned in that bundled contract scenario that you just described? Have you learned anything that you can apply then to the outpatient clinics to make you better at providing service there?
Yeah, so one of the things early on, so we had seen a patient in skilled nursing who had a total hip replacement, that she was in skilled nursing for like 2 weeks because she didn't have a railing that she can go up her like 7 stairs. And so something like that just seemed, you know, not good for the patient, you know, pretty silly from the healthcare perspective. And so we started to do home visits for the total joint patients. And so really looking at not just what's the environment, you know, what does the patient present with, but when they're home, when they're at work, when they're doing their hobbies, like what actually are they doing? What does that look like? And so we've been in our patients' homes before these procedures, and we can look at fall risks. Can they actually ambulate into the bathroom? You know, can they use their walker properly, their commode properly? And so really looking at what their environment is, and then making sure, just to remind ourselves, you know, as therapists, which we normally do anyway, but what's the environment that they're actually going back to when they go back to home, to work, or to sport?
Yeah, that's great. And the other thing that I'm thinking about here is, doesn't New York have one of the lowest payment payments for services in the U.S.? And if that's true, then how do you make it work financially from when you're comparing yourselves to you know, similar companies in different states that have a different reimbursement level?
Steve, I think that's probably one of the reasons why we've had to have such good data, is there's not a lot of room. So payment is extremely low, regularly high, and that's all we knew when we kind of opened up our practice. And if I can just kind of tell our story super quick, we had a therapist move down to North Carolina our first year, first therapist we ever hired. And he was working for a large company, and we were talking one day. He's like, I miss working together and everything of opening up down here. And that's how we kind of ended up down in North Carolina. And I was looking at EOBs one day, and we're like, what are we doing in New York? And after that, you know, we kind of tried to network and get involved, and we ended up with a practice in Jersey and PA. We're looking at EOBs and kind of seeing the different regulations and payments and restrictions, and that has kind of had us branch out of New York a little bit. It is a tough place to do business. We do love it here, and obviously we have a lot of connections here, which have led to us to have opportunities to provide value to local health systems. So we're absolutely committed to growing in New York, but also in beyond.
And then in North Carolina, then you said you opened up one. Have you opened up others then to support that? And do you feel like you're going to grow in that area as well?
You know, initially I didn't really understand the value kind of a market share, if you will. And we were a little bit of a shiny object. Kind of there's an opportunity here. I don't want to get into it. We actually had a small place in Kentucky, and then Illinois was the same story as North Carolina. We had a great staff member move out there, and we realized that geographic density and market leadership and market share are powerful to us to really serve communities well. So we're trying now to kind of, yes, if we go to an area, to commit and really expand our reach and have a greater impact on the communities in that region. So we do plan on growing in that area and connecting the dots between, you know, our North Carolina and our Northeast locations.
Yeah, that's great. I do think there's some real value in that, that when you, you know, if you just have, we used to have a clinic and we called it our Dances with Wolves clinic, you know, like out way out on its own. And it was hard to support. But when you expand into new areas, if you can have multiple clinics that can kind of feed off each other and market together and do things, a lot of times that growth is easier in that sense.
Right.
So when you have 50 plus locations, obviously you need talent to go with that. So how do you find enough people? How do you find the right people? How do you help them learn and grow? What's your strategy on finding the talent and keeping them there?
So for the most part, we love to have the people that have grown within the company have just been just that. They've been, you know, with us and continue to grow, you know, throughout their career. And so something really important to us is making sure that we do have opportunities for people, you know, whether it's on the therapist side or the admin side, to continue to grow within the organization. But then as far as having new people join the team, you know, which is super exciting. There's some amazing therapists coming out of school, just so, so smart. And it's really, it all comes down to values and aligned values, you know, and aligned, you know, vision of where they want to go as a therapist, as a professional, you know, and where we're going as an organization. And so, you know, you can teach people if we look at any certain metrics or whatever it might be, you know, but you're not really going to change who they are. And so, you know, making sure you find the right people that are aligned values and culture wise.
And what do you think people, new professionals coming out into the field, what are they looking for? What is the thing that you feel like you can tap into that that attracts that right kind of person into your organization?
You know, I think one thing is really just making sure that they're aligned with the purpose. You know, the purpose of them and their career is aligned with the purpose of the company. And so, you know, I think it's beyond just, you know, coming to work for a paycheck and seeing patients, you know, but are we truly being impactful in the communities that we serve? Can you tie, you know, I think if you can tie that individual purpose with the company purpose, it's just so much stronger. And so really understanding, you know, each person's goals as a professional, as a person, and making sure we have continuous conversations with them. You know, are we helping them? Are we being a good partner in helping them achieve their personal goals, their professional goals?
And you guys have been doing this for a while. So is the new professional coming out now looking for something different than they were, say, 5 or 10 years ago?
Yeah, this is Chris. I'll take this one. Other than the immediate impact of COVID, we can maybe get to a little bit later. But yeah, I really do think that we have a much more educated PT student base that really it's important for them to, when they pick a first job and pick one that's going to be about learning and mentoring, and that has a career ladder. I know there's many people in the private practice community that do something similar, and we've all kind of shared, but Steve and I are so passionate about private practice and leadership. And, you know, I think this is probably our 9th year, 10th year of our leadership development program. And we do one every 6 months. In fact, Thursday night, we have our next session. And it's something that, in addition to clinical training, those softer skills, those communication skills, those leadership skills are something I think is so important. And it's very important to Steve and I to really spend time on that aspect as well as improving their clinical skills.
You know, it's such a great point. I do believe in my observation that the companies that do really well do have leadership development programs, and they help people learn and grow, and people are looking for that. So without giving too much of your secret sauce, could you just kind of let us know, what does that structure look like? What do you do as far as helping your people develop their leadership skills?
Yeah, I appreciate that, the question. And we always challenge ourselves each year, how do we keep making the program better, right? So from a higher level point of view, Steve and I lead Own This, right? And we love to spend time with our future leaders. And it's our job, I think, as leaders to grow other leaders. Steve and I are very passionate about that. So we try to, there's definitely content and we have different modules throughout it, but we always try to bring it back to real world leadership scenarios where there's breakout groups and you're actually having to work through a challenge or problem and not sure what, you know, how it happened in the past, what would you do differently as a result? And then we try to have immersive experiences part of the program, as well as a capstone project that's pretty immersive to help solve a problem and improve the value of access.
Yeah, that's really smart. And I think also there's been a lot lately about the reflection part of it too. You know, I mean, you can throw out a lot of content. You can throw out a lot of, you know, this is what some people think and some people do and whatever, but it's when the person reflects on how that affects them personally and how they feel they can make that into their style, so to speak, and go forward.
That's a great point.
Yes.
So what's your strategy for the future? I mean, you just keep adding more locations, go into more states. Can you share with us a little bit about what you think your company's going to be like in the next 5 years?
Yeah, so I'll start off. And so, you know, one is about making sure that we have an environment that therapists want to join. And so making sure we never lose sight, you know, of why we're here and the purpose, to make sure that we have a great place, you know, to have, you know, team members join the team. And then, you know, second is really to grow, continue to grow, you know, throughout where we are and beyond. And there's so much conversation now, especially, I mean, some folks are way ahead of the curve, you know, especially on the employer side. But when we go into a market, it's really about how can we be a great healthcare partner? And that's to employers, to the community, to payers, to the healthcare system, to hospitals, health systems. And so making sure when we go into a new market that we have that clear, defined strategy. We have the right team in place. And I mean, we're just super excited about, for one, the profession, about, you know, musculoskeletal costs is probably either number one, two, or three for most employers. And so, and PT services is such an ideal option, you know, to be that go-to provider, PT first model. And so, you know, I think making sure that we can have the geography to cover this, you know, the areas, combining virtual care, but continue to grow, you know, throughout the markets that we're in and beyond.
Maybe I can just add a little bit onto that, because I'm absolutely so passionate about the value that PT and Access PT can play in our healthcare system. You know, we've had a lot of conversations over the years about the dentist model, right? You know, you don't go to the dentist when your tooth is killing you. You go there to help prevent that from happening and to keep your teeth healthy and white. You know, we really want to be the entry point into the musculoskeletal healthcare system and kind of be that primary musculoskeletal care provider. That's really our vision as we grow, and that people actually would see us once, probably twice a year, to help prevent and improve the quality of their movements and gait, to add on to that.
Right. And you see some some great practices out there doing similar stuff, which is awesome. And, you know, you look at the work from like Michael Porter and Robert Kaplan from HBS, and, you know, it's the value in healthcare is outcomes divided by the cost to get those outcomes. And so using that simple equation with pretty much any kind of musculoskeletal condition, you know, for the most part, that a PT first model just makes complete sense. And so that's where, again, we're just super excited about just rehab in general and the profession.
Yeah, that's awesome. Now, are you guys co-CEOs?
We are.
Okay. And tell me, I mean, I'll just be upfront. A lot of business people would say, oh, don't do that. You can't have two guys being the boss. You got to have one do the other. And so how do you make that work? And then, you know, do you each have, let's say, executive privilege to just walk in and say, okay, this is what we're going to do and this is why? How do you guys work through that?
You know, we're about to hire this guy, Steve Anderson, as a consultant to work through how do we do this right.
That's funny.
Just a funny story. I remember we're both in middle school. We're sharing a bedroom, and my sister got her own room. And you know, I have two boys, so I can relate. You know, we were typical boys, rough and tumble. And my dad's like, the floor is gonna fall through. And finally, we put a little addition, and we got our own rooms. So we just have our own offices now. I'm kidding. But there's no doubt that, you know, clarity around roles and responsibilities is something we could always do better, and we've been trying really hard to work at. And kind of, you know, there's definitely a lot of power and awesomeness, if you will, of working together with your brothers and your wives. And like I mentioned, this great country was founded on a family business. But there's no doubt there's challenges as well. How do you turn it off, and how do you agree on certain high level things? So we've been working hard about this is kind of an owner's box room, and this is not an owner's box room, and kind of trying to have a little bit more discipline around roles and responsibilities and what goes in what box.
And probably the biggest thing we've had to do better with is just communication and just making sure that we're constantly communicating just what we're feeling, how we're doing. Because we didn't want it to be like a parent situation, like kids going to parents and us saying different things. And so just making sure Chris and I, Shannon and Janet, that we're all on the same page and making sure that we're giving our team, you know, the right guidance and not, you know, not causing any confusion.
Yeah, and I would imagine, too, that when you're that close, as you guys are, and with your spouses as well, is that a lot of times, you know, you have that communication that you're used to, that you grew up with. It's just part of your DNA, where other people in your organization may not, you know, clue into that as much. And so I would assume that you probably have to be very aware of you and Chris may be on the same page, but others are trying to figure out, you know, how do they fit in, or how do they communicate in a different way as well?
Definitely.
Sure.
So tell me if I'm right on this, but I think, Chris, you're in Vistage, which is and peer-to-peer, which Correct. Is a mastermind group. And Steve, I think you're in YPO, right? Young Presence
Correct.
Organization. And so those mastermind groups and you're working with other people, they're very collaborative. So what do you take out of these collaborative models that you're involved in as well?
You know, for one, there are just so many smart people out there, and so many smart people that are willing to just help and have a conversation and, you know, talk through an issue or a challenge. And so I've gotten so much out of the YPO experience, you know, mainly just looking at how people do things outside of New York, outside of the Northeast. You know, there's a healthcare business network, which you talk through healthcare issues, you know, throughout the world. And so how are people in New Zealand or other parts of the world, how are they working through musculoskeletal conditions? You know, what's the role of the therapist? And so, you know, I think it's definitely opened our eyes to what else could be. And then, you know, and also sharing and giving back. And so it's been a great organization to be a part of.
I'll just second that, Steve. And I know you're so passionate about collaboration, mastermind groups, and, you know, so are we. Just a really quick story. I remember talking to my accountant and my lawyer and be like, is there any group around here where, you know, I can just collaborate with other business owners that are non-competitive and kind of work on, you know, similar, whether it's marketing or HR or finance. And they're like, no, you can hire us. And I actually got lost at a PPS meeting in San Diego. And I ended up at a Vistage Executive Summit. And the courses actually look almost more intriguing than some of the PPS courses. Where did I stumble onto? And this lady handed me a CD, and that's how I joined Vistage, is by walking into the national conference by accident. It happened in the same hotel as PPS, and I've loved it ever since.
You know, that's a great story. I'll just share. I was in Vistage for 7.5 years myself, and I can remember as a young CEO thinking, geez, I need a group that, you know, I can just be from different businesses and somebody I can just really be open to and bleed my guts to and do all this kind of stuff. And then I thought, there's nothing like that. And then just like a week later, I get this thing in the mail inviting me to a introductory session of Vistage. And I read about it and I go, this is so weird. I was just thinking about that. And so I went to it and same deal. It was just like exactly what I needed at the time. Crazy awesome. How that stuff happens. Now, Chris, you're also an Eagle Scout. Is that right?
So Steve and I are both Eagle Scouts.
Oh, you both are. So tell me how that has helped form your leadership style.
Yeah, let me start. So I happen to have two boys and a scoutmaster of the local troop. One's an Eagle, one's Life, working on Eagle projects. We were brainstorming this weekend. So scouting is still a huge part of my life. Steve has two girls. But there's no doubt that the fundamentals, the scout oath, the scout law, is kind of a part of who we are, how we were brought up. And there's no doubt we brought some of that into our values and culture at Access. And I'm just a big fan of the whole scouting program and what it's taught me and what I've seen it teach my boys. But it's something that I know, you know, our parents are very proud of, and I couldn't wait to get my boys into it. And I'm trying to continue to give back and be a part of local scout community.
You know, one of the aspects of scouting is to, you know, whenever we go to a campsite or what have you, it's leave it better than how you found it. And so, you know, I think that stands true, whether it's a relationship, you go into a community with a practice, or, you know, hopefully us as therapists in the profession, you know, you find it one way and hopefully you make a little mark on it. You make it a little bit better, you add a little bit to it, but always leave it better than you found it.
Yeah, that's great. Now, maybe this is because I'm not in tune to it as much, but it seems like, you know, scouting used to be a bigger deal. And is there less Eagle Scouts coming out? Is it less, is the program, well, why do you think it's different than it used to be 20, 30 years ago?
There's no doubt that there's much more travel sports and overscheduled kids. And, you know, I have a few of them. So I think fitting in, you know, scouts to, you know, travel sports, it's just harder, right? And the Eagle Scout requirements are pretty demanding, and they've actually added to it more service projects that you have to do and lead. And actually, they added cooking merit badges because they find these people coming out couldn't cook, I guess. But I really like they added more leadership projects at a younger age. So now you have to start much younger and then culminate in an Eagle Scout project. So you're leading smaller and get larger groups and finally an Eagle Scout project. So I really like what they've done with it. Just unfortunately, a lot of demands on these slightly overscheduled kids.
Yeah, that's a good point. And I would assume that both of you kind of grew up doing sports as well. So when you compare the two, because, you know, a lot of people always say, I learned so much out of organized sports as far as being a leader, you know, in my business. Can you compare the two? Do you think they're similar, or does one do something different than the other?
Yeah, I think, you know, for us, sports was a big part of growing up. And, you know, with that, you have leadership, communication, teamwork. And so there's so many great parallels to, you know, being part of a successful team, you know, whether it's a sports team, business team, you know, or family team. And so, you know, probably the biggest one is, you know, just the values, culture, whatever that group is, and making sure that it's right. And then, you know, just great communication and always being there for each other.
Yeah. Now, being close brothers, do you like the same sports teams now? Do you have your favorite NFL team or baseball team or whatever? Or do you have rival teams? What are your teams?
So I'm a big Giants fan on the football side. So Giants, Yankees, and kind of haven't watched as much basketball, hockey. But hockey would be definitely Rangers and then Knicks for basketball.
Chris, same for you.
I'll admit, even though my family is kind of like a Giants family, I'm not a huge professional sports follower. I'm an avid outdoorsman. That's my passion.
All right, awesome. Now, which one of you is more sensitive, would you say?
I'll jump in. I'll say Steve. I think Steve has amazing relationship building skills and always does a great job of reminding me that the work doesn't get in the way of leading and being a CEO and making sure culture and patience come first. That is the work, and I appreciate the reminder daily.
I think it's possibly a middle child syndrome or something like that. But
yeah. You're the peacemaker. You're the peacemaker.
There right? you go. Yeah. And that's what it is.
Yeah. I'm a middle child as well. So I can relate. Right. So what are you guys' biggest challenges when you get up in the morning and you get, you know, excited to go into the office and, you know, I can hear the passion and for the profession and developing leaders and doing that part of it. But what are your biggest challenges?
I'll start. You know, I'm going to say presently, I'm going to mention COVID. I think this was probably one of the hardest things that we've went through. But I also want to give a huge shout out to all of the frontline people out there that have probably have had much harder times than we did. You know, whether you're at a grocery store, obviously healthcare workers, especially those ones actively treating COVID patients, and teachers trying to get our kids to learn safely in this crazy environment. So I don't want to ever think like we had it tougher than anybody else by far. I don't think so, but it's been hard. Our area in the Northeast got hit real hard. I think it was right after you guys got hit out there, Steve.
Like, yeah.
So we got hit real bad and things were just closed down. Visits dropped 70% overnight. You know, we really wanted to be good to our team and we're trying to figure out what to do. And we worked with a large bank who was not very responsive, but they're like, you know, just hang on. And so, and we thought, you know, wash your hands in a few weeks, this will be over. Obviously that's not the case. Numbers are ticking up. We're trying, you know, our very best to kind of navigate what the future is going to hold. But I think we went from a period of kind of, you know, having, you know, COVID being bad and now some staffing challenges kind of coming out of COVID this year, all understandable. This is the world has gone through this crazy pandemic, but it definitely has been a great learning experience. I feel I know I've grown a lot as a leader through some of these tough times, but no doubt that, you know, trying to predict what the fall is going to be like and what the winter is going to be like is pretty challenging in the short term.
And on the right, on the business side as well, you look at just the whole market. So whether it's consolidation, you look at payment pressures, regulatory issues. And, you know, I would say some of those are, they're definitely challenges, but they're also opportunities that how can we actually take those and work around them or find good partners to collaborate with. And so, but yeah, there's definitely some, you know, on the payment side, being paid fairly for the work that we do, you know, there's at least not that I've seen like standard models of getting paid fairly for the value that you create. And so, you know, trying to work with payers or employers on creating those has been a challenge, but it's also so exciting. You know, I think it's one of the things that worries me, but also it gets me out of bed and gets me excited about, you know, really, because we have such an amazing product and deliver such a great service for our patients that, you know, just making sure that we can articulate the value and put those models together that makes for everyone is a concern, but also really exciting.
Yeah, that's great. And speaking of COVID, what changes have you seen in your employees since COVID? You know, and I would love to say, you know, that it's over, but it's certainly not. It seems like it's ticking up again, and here we go again almost. What changes have you seen in your employees in dealing with it from their aspect?
You know, one change from our team members, plus us as a company, is just more conversations around resiliency and around, you know, how are they doing physically, mentally, you know, the burnout conversations. And so, you know, and some of those that were being had before, but now we're trying to be more open and just have transparent conversations and, you know, help with some, maybe some tools, some tricks, some, and being there for each other and just making sure, you know, that we are, you know, we end pretty much every meeting with just thanking people for what they do for our patients, but most importantly, what they do for each other and seeing people kind of rally around and help each other during times, you know, whether it's COVID-related or not, has been so important. And, you know, one of those things is really gratitude. And so, you know, trying to have that culture of just being grateful. And so we, Chris and I, Shem and Janet, you know, we're so grateful for our teams and in trying to make sure we express that in as many ways as possible.
Yeah, that's great. It's, you know, it's just such a weird time. And, you know, a lot of people have been saying that healthcare and specific physical therapy as well, that there's kind of a high level of burnout and that, you know, so that's even been exacerbated here during the pandemic. And then also that talking to somebody recently, and he says, we as employers and as leaders just have to realize that our people are exhausted. They're just exhausted with work and home life and trying to make it all work. And then we're expecting them to kind of say, okay, now let's pick it up and let's keep going. And that's a hard ask sometimes.
Yeah, it is. And I'm going to echo what Steve said. I mean, we're just so unbelievably appreciative and grateful for all our team has done during this COVID. And what so many people throughout the country have dealt with additional stressors in addition to, like you said, what they currently have to do at work. And I get it. And I pray and hope that this is in the rearview mirror in the near future.
Yeah. Hopefully. You know, when you look at when you guys have your big goals, and I know you guys are visionary strategic thinkers, so you're thinking, you know, what this is going to look like down the road. To reach those goals, what are the biggest hurdles you have to get over to get there?
You know, I'll start. I think for 18 years since we've been running this awesome company that we're blessed to run, we've been on our soapbox about the dentist model, where we would like to have no copay for at least one, if not two, annual PT or musculoskeletal exams. And we just haven't gotten the traction for payers to understand the value of kind of that PT first model, us being primary care providers. Now, whether it's resources or their focus on larger health systems with multi different disciplines, is how do we? We know the value we have, and to comment on what Steve mentioned, it's just how do you get there? And so that's one of the kind of challenges. I think that it just totally makes sense. Dollar for dollar, I think we are the best value in healthcare, period. I might be a little biased. I'm a PT and so passionate about PT, but I really think it just makes a lot of sense. But how do you need, and maybe it's the employer. Maybe it's what you guys were just talking about before. The employers need to help us drive this change.
And, you know, I think, sorry, like some of the work, even, you know, at least when I got into PPS, you know, you were president, Steve, and just have great admiration for what you have done for the practice and for the profession and continue to do. And I think that therapist practices working together more and making sure we are aligned, we have a similar voice, you know, when we're going to larger entities, whether it's, you know, payers, employers, what have you, but making sure that we're coming together as a more united voice, you know, I think is so important. And so, you know, whether we come as one access group or we come as a similar voice, you know, in a certain region, but making sure that, you know, that is that the people that we're talking to know the true value of what we're going there with. And so again, when we're going to a national payer, employer, health system, that it's clear the value that we provide and that we can provide it for all their members, patients in their coverage area.
So when we look at the future of physical therapy, I mean, we've been pretty heavily reliant on third-party payers to pay the fees for our services. And, you know, I know a lot of people are branching out and trying to do the cash pay business and trying to do things where people take more responsibility for their own care and pay for it. Do you see us going in that direction? Do you see that's going to be more of what your business is going to look like in the future? Or are you sticking hard with the third-party payer system?
Yeah, you know, we've seen some practices do really well in the cash-based model. You know, we haven't gone that route. You know, it's been a small part, you know, honestly, of what we've done. And, you know, but I do think that the third-party payers, I think, is definitely out there, and it's a majority of how we get paid, you know. But, you know, I think the conversations around the value is, is where we need to go. And, you know, even almost a metric of what percent of our revenue is from value versus fee for service, you know, or versus a third party payer is something, you know, that we should start to look at. Cause I think that's where we need to head. And, you know, but right now we're not strong at all in the cash based practice model.
Chris, what's your thoughts on that?
You know, we're blessed to serve so many communities, and our demographic is blue collar soccer moms. And I don't want to kind of say that they won't have discretionary income to go cash, but I'm passionate about the value that we provide. I think that, you know, insurance companies spend a lot of money on surgeries and procedures, and I think truly feel that we could save them and, of course, their customers, which are the employers, so much money. Just in the joint Steve was talking about, like the money that we save, and whether it's acute, you know, rehab or subacute rehab or Part A home care or readmissions, falls, those are real dollars that we're saving. It's just we need to kind of come together as a bigger group. And to me, it's a very simple math that I can put in the back of a napkin, but how do we share in that value saving so we really kind of have that seat at the table and we could continue to thrive and prosper and add so much value in the healthcare system?
So, Steve, yeah, go ahead.
Sorry, so I had a conversation recently with a health plan who's part of Health Rosetta. And so David Chase, who I think you brought to a Graham sessions one time.
Yes. And I've interviewed him on this program as well. So yeah, Dave's a great guy. Just
awesome. And so, you know, that kind of mindset is, you know, I think is where we all need to be heading towards. And so, you know, the conversation with the health plan was they have preferred providers, let's say for a total hip replacement. And so, or let's say more spine surgery. And the conversation was they may be the preferred provider for spine surgery, but do they actually need surgery to begin with? And so, you know, I think that model of that PT first model for musculoskeletal, and how can we continue to have good partners like the folks that work with Dave and Health Rosetta, and that have that, again, that mindset around value.
Yeah. And share with us a little bit, because I know you have experience in this area where you have gone into those hospital systems and been a part of a bundled, payment system, which most people are afraid of. How did you make that work, and how did you get their attention to even have a seat at the table?
One was helping them think through the rehab strategy and how can rehab play a part in where they want to go. And especially looking at, so about the time is maybe 6 years ago, groups were bringing on, so ACOs were coming about, they brought on population health teams. And so thinking through, like, how do you actually operationalize this? Like, how do you make it work? And a lot of it was having some more ambulatory presence, being in the communities and being a more of a frontline provider. That's easy access and low barrier, easy access to care. And then you look at the diagnoses that make sense that, you know, we can have impact on. So you look at fall prevention, general orthopedic conditions, and rehab is just that right partner, you know, for so many of those. And so articulating the strategy of how does it make sense, or why does it make sense to have a greater rehab presence, and then tying it together. So we almost think about it as, you know, we have continuum of care therapists. And so they see patients throughout the continuum of care. And it's almost like they're walking the patients through that care cycle. So like with the orthopedic cases, the elective cases, you know, the same therapist sees the patient in the home before surgery, articulates all the obstacles, barriers that the patients have at home to the case management, to the inpatient therapist. So they know what does the patient actually have to do to be discharged home safely. And then that same therapist meets the patient back at home after surgery. And so they feel like they've been pretty much walked through that care continuum throughout the process.
Yeah.
So it was really helping to articulate that strategy and then operationalizing it.
And I love that. That makes a lot of sense, but let's even back up a little bit. How do you get to the person that's going to listen to you? How did you find those people that you could even have that discussion with? Because a lot of people say, geez, I can't even get in the door. So how did mechanically did you do that?
So, I mean, this was just through relationships. and, you know, kind of reaching out. And again, how can we first, you know, always go into that servant mentality, you know, how can we serve you or them? And so, you know, some cases were, you know, we just had great patient experience and the patients helped us connect with the physicians who were tied to, let's say, the health system or the health plan. And it went that way. And so, you know, there for us, at least, has been no magic bullet, no crazy sales team. It was about just being involved, being connected, you know, serving first and then adding value, you know, afterwards.
Yeah, you know, it's so interesting. In my coaching business, there's a lot of people that are always looking for the silver bullet, the structured plan. This is how you do it, and this is what happens. And right. There isn't. It's just like you said. It's relationships. It's being present. It's being, you know, seeing an opportunity when there's one, and building a relationship around that, and so on. So it's just, you know, you can't produce a formula and say, here's how you do it.
Not at all. And then once you have that connection, just, you know, being proactive and asking, you know, how can we help? You know, or are you having trouble with this? Or, you know, can I help with that? And so, you know, that, and that's how with this one health plan that we're, you know, we're putting together some pilot programs with, it was about one of their patients had great experience. They wanted to do a case rate agreement. And we just started talking about our philosophies and values. And it just went from there. And so, I mean, it always starts with, again, what we do as providers. We just deliver great care and then, you know, make the connections from there. I'm sure there are much more structured, better proactive ways to do it. But that's just one of them.
That's awesome. So who do you guys, not necessarily specific to PT, or it could be, or, you know, the broader scope business, politics, whatever you want to say, who do you admire and who do you gain inspiration from?
Wow. You know, I'm going to start by just going back to like Vistage and kind of peer-to-peer, the other people that leave it all out there every day to provide an amazing job and career and serve communities out there in the PT world and beyond the PT world, is definitely someone who I gain a lot from and I learn a lot from, and I feel energized by kind of being a better business owner and leader as a result. That's the first thing that comes to mind for me. And obviously, Steve and I are avid readers. We're always exchanging books and audiobooks and collaborating. And I'm in his office right now, and there's like bookshelves overflowing.
That's great.
So many, many authors who are nice enough to share their life's work, and we can buy it on Amazon. Very grateful for them.
Steve, how about you?
Yeah, I would say something similar. So I can't think of, you know, one particular person, but I would think it'd be a culmination of people that we've connected with. And so whether it is, you know, through books we've read or people that we've met or, you know, podcasts we listen to. And so, you know, and that's where, you know, I always try and take little notes or nuggets in a journal and write down ideas because, you know, again, there are people that have gone through similar situations, you know, maybe not exactly the same, but, you know, that we can gain perspective from. And so, you know, I think, you know, books for us, like Chris said, has been such an amazing learning opportunity and, you know, something that there's so much, there's a wealth of knowledge out there. And then also, you know, going back to like the YPO and Vistage and just reaching out to people, you know, having a mentor if you can, or just having a conversation. And when you're stuck, just say, I'm stuck, I'm having trouble with this. And there's so many people that'll raise their hand and say, you know, let me help you talk through this, you know, with you. And so, you know, that's been a great inspiration.
That's great. Now, since you brought up reading lists, share with us what's a couple of your favorites. Each of you give us a couple that we could look at.
So one book that I've loved is The Obstacle is the Way. I think it's by Ryan Holiday. And so, again, just looking at challenges you've had, things that you come up against, and that's the way to get through it. And so, you know, I think that there's so many positive things to that book. One thing on leadership development that Chris was talking about. And so you have John Maxwell's five levels of leadership. And I think that the overall concept of that is just so important for any new or existing leader to really understand about those five levels and moving, especially from level one to level two to level three. And you know, I think one more softer book is just How Full Is Your Bucket? And that is by, I think, Donald Clifton. And just talking about when you see other people, like, how can you make their day better? How can you fill their bucket, whether it's with a compliment, helping them out? But how can you, you look at almost every person, imagine they have a bucket above their head, and just how can you fill it? How can you add value to them? How can you make their day better?
Yeah, awesome. Chris, you got anything to add there?
One, I'm a huge fan of Don Clifton. The Gallup and did Strengths Finders and Strengths Based Leadership. And so definitely a great author. You know, some newer ones, I recently had a recommendation from Peer-to-Peer Appreciative Art of Gathering. Hopefully we can gather soon, but it's helped me with some Zoom gatherings as well. The One Thing I read last year, I really liked that book. And then always trying to improve habits. And I read the Atomic Habit book recently that I like the small microscopic changes in habits to instead of just biting the whole elephant in one bite.
Yeah, that's great. That's great. Now, I don't think the three of us could have a discussion on a podcast without telling the story of when we were in Utah, and I think it was at the Graham Sessions, and we went skiing. And do you remember we borrowed Mark Anderson's old beat-up pickup truck, and yes. Coming down the hill, something was wrong with the brakes, and I was driving, and every time I hit the brake, we violently were thrust forward, and we just started laughing, and every time I hit the brakes, we would all laugh, and oh my gosh, that was like one of the most interesting road trips I've ever been on.
Steve, I think that was a nervous laugh that we thought we were going to die.
Oh my gosh. By the time we got down that mountain, I think my core hurt as much as anything from laughing so hard every time I hit the brakes.
But after trying to keep up with Mark on the mountain, that was just as scary.
Yeah.
Thanks for reminding me of a great time.
No, that was something else. So usually, guys, at this time in the interview, I always ask a common question, and that question is, in relation to leadership, what pearl of wisdom can you leave us with today? I'd like one from each of you. So, Chris, you're the oldest. You go first.
Hi. Thanks, Steve. You know, being PTs, I'll kind of mention the whole muscle growth. I think leadership is a muscle, or at least it's a great analogy, right? And if you never fail, if you never go outside your comfort zone or challenge you, just like if you never kind of overload a muscle and do those micro tears, you're not going to grow. Your muscle's not going to grow as a leader. So, you know, for me, I think that if you think about a great leader, even a great coach that you've had that really challenged you, they coached, they mentored you, they saw a capacity in you that you probably didn't even see in yourself. So for me, our job as leaders is to grow, challenge, coach someone, and to help them develop as a leader. Because oftentimes they'll find capacity, a leadership capacity they didn't know they have. And also they don't often get a chance to lead and really give them that opportunity to lead once you've helped improve their leadership muscle.
Awesome. Steve,
I'm not sure if this dates back to Napoleon Hill or other self-help folks, but you know, the concept of that you're the average of the five people you spend the most time with. And I think that can be, you know, whether it's a person in person, it's a book, it's a podcast. And so, but I think that whatever comes into your mind, how you, you know, what you absorb, like that's who you become. And so making sure that you're just for one cognizant of who you want to be, where you want to go, and then making sure you surround yourself with those folks, especially with the right values and culture that'll help you get there.
That's awesome. Well, guys, thanks so much for being on the program today. I mean, you're doing some great things out there, and I've always admired your business and your friendship. And gosh, you can just hear it in your voices. You're passionate about what you do. You love what you do. You love working with other people, and that's what it's all about. So it's been a pleasure spending time with you today. And I wish you the best of luck, and I'm sure we'll run into each other many times in the future.
Thank you so much, Stephen. We love the work you're doing as well. Keep it up.
Yeah, truly our pleasure. This was fun. Thanks so much, Steve.
Yeah, thanks so much, guys. Take care.
Take care.
Thank you for listening to another episode of Profiles in Leadership. To listen to all my interviews, subscribe to Profiles in Leadership with Steve Anderson on Apple Podcasts, iTunes, and many other popular podcast platforms. Some of these interviews are on video, and you can search YouTube for Profiles in Leadership with Steve Anderson. You can also access the entire library of interviews on my website, orange.coaching.com, and that is orange.coaching.com, and go to the Media Center and click on Podcasts or Video Gallery. You can also enter the website from pilpodcast.com.